Bingo. All right, so I'm Rick Hansen, and this is October 8th, 2014. And I want to talk with you about checking your technology to make sure it works. So I did that part right there. That's good. The title here for me is Thou All Others. And here's what I mean by it. You may have heard of Martin Buber, theologian, philosopher, teacher, mainly in the Jewish tradition. And he had this notion of three kinds of relationships: I, thou, I, it, and it, it. And if you're not familiar with this simple typology, it's very, very powerful. What he means, I, thou, is that from the perspective of the I, we treat the other person as a being. And by the way, we can have an I-thou relationship with a dog, a mosquito, or a tree. But we generally, I'm going to focus here tonight about human relationships. So the thou to us is a being that we have respect for and that we don't exploit. We have a sense of them as a person. We don't think of them as just simply a means to our own ends, right? We don't think of them as an extension of ourselves to be used or directed like we might use or direct our own arm. We could have a disagreement with a thou. We could have hierarchy in our relationship of one kind or another. It doesn't mean that we need to like them or approve of them, and yet they can still be a thou to us. For me right now, you are thous to me. I'm not trying to use you as a means toward my own ends. I suspect I'm a thou to you. Doesn't mean we're best friends or necessarily know each other well, but we can be I and thou with each other. Then I, it, is a situation where we are using people more or less as a means to our own ends. We have little or no sense of them as a being. There are ways of relating to others in the sense of its that are not inherently bad. There you are on the phone with someone doing, making a plane reservation for you, or you're just trying to move through a process with somebody, and they're an it to you. But it's, on the other hand, anytime we treat another as an it, minimally it's a yellow flag, if not an orange or red one, that we need to be careful about. And flip it around, as I'll say more about this, we all have a sense of what it's like to be treated as an it by other people. Right? Sometimes it's a very straightforward kind of thing. There you are in a restaurant. Someone says, do you mind the ketchup's on your table? And you're like, oh, sure, sure. Or you ask them, could I have the ketchup, please? It's okay. But on the whole, we know what it's like to be treated as an it when it doesn't feel very good. And then there is the third category, it, kind of like bodies in space, strangers in an elevator, people walking past each other, in a busy sidewalk, cars down the road. And again, there's a place for a certain amount of it, but it becomes increasingly problematic if we just sort of numb out and feel like drones, or ants, or just machines going past each other. Okay, see the basic structure? I, thou, I, it. And I've been having great lessons lately around itting. Because we launched this recent online program, Foundations of Wellbeing, and I've been experiencing the great teacher of customer service. Right? And so it very often happens that many, many communications, and I'm getting a lot of communications, which is cool, many, many communications are very respectful, supportive. You can feel that you're being treated as a thou by the other person. Right? Maybe they have a problem. Maybe they have a disagreement or a complaint. But you can feel that there's a sense in them of you as a being of some kind. Then there are the other emails, right? The ones where people are, clearly accusatorily entitled. And it's a very interesting thing these days that has made me really reflect on the ways in which I think many people seem to have a kind of entitled attitude mixed up with a complaint that I think a lot is due to the ways that people these days often feel really pushed around and itted themselves. So as a kind of compensation for the ways in which advertising and, you know, politicians and other forces, corporate interests, you know, large-scale organizational policies, tend to it people, that there's a kind of compensatory pushback that's problematic sometimes. And then on the other side of it, there's myself or people I'm working with, you know, getting this program going, which has 4,500 people in it so far. Like, it's a lot of opportunity for customer service. It's so easy on our end to it the other. You know, wait a minute, I'm trying really hard to do this. Wait a minute, you know, you're actually the person who forgot your username. Why are you blaming me because I didn't remind you of your username that you chose when you originally registered and is actually in the automatically produced email you received when you registered? Have you ever thought about going back into your inbox looking for the username we sent you? You know, so that's kind of my thought balloon. Not always in the balloon, you know. So far, I've, you know, there's a term in Buddhism, guard the sense doors. That's more around the inputs. I think we should also guard the output doors, you know. Like, don't push send until you talk to your wife or other people, you know. So far, I've been pretty good about that, I think. But still, the thought balloon minimally arises. So then it gets very interesting. You know, you feel itted on the one side, and then you, like, want to it them back, and then we have, like, it wars, and, like, I don't know if this rings any bells for anybody in the room, but there's like a certain amount of life that's like this. Okay, and then you can think of this obviously scaling up way past the, what our kids call first world problems of, you know, I forgot my username or something like that, or, you know, I have a slow internet connection or the picture won't load or something, to, you know, really serious forms of itting, right? Exploitive organizational policies, corporations is casually getting rid of their employee pensions, discrimination, prejudice, war. Terrible things. Terrible, terrible things. Done in the form of itting others. I mean, I've often been struck by people who can be profoundly loving toward us and yet slaughter the children of them. You know, like, et cetera. So this is the territory I want to explore here. As a kind of context, if you think about what's called sociobiology, evolutionary psychology, which is a, you know, body of knowledge or views we, I think, need to take a regard with a grain of salt, if not a bucket of salt. But that said, as our ancestors evolved in mainly small bands in which they bred mainly internally, there's a lot of evidence from various sources that from the standpoint of pure biological evolution, passing on genes that pass on genes, that there were survival advantages, there were evolutionary advantages in developing a strong sense of thou, using that language, toward us. And there were many, many advantages from raw survival standpoints to developing strong inclinations to it them. See that dynamic? You know, bands that were better at thouing each other, including to the point of altruistic sacrifice or altruistic feelings, were more able to pass on genes that passed on genes, and also bands that had genetic predispositions or capabilities toward dehumanizing, aggressing upon, and casually exploiting them were also more able to get supplies in a context in which bands often competed with each other for scarce resources over millions of years under harsh conditions. You know, those bands were more able to pass on genes that pass on genes. So we have within us the capability, certainly, and sometimes even the inclination to thou another or it them. And this thouing and itting process can, I think of it almost as a kind of circle that expands and contracts. You know, outside that circle are its, and inside the circle are thous. But haven't we all? I certainly have had the experience where you're in a situation where you're with some people who have been thous to you, and suddenly they do something. They use that tone of voice, or they don't pick you up at the bus for 20 minutes, or they don't put their dishes in the dishwasher the right way, or whatever it may be. And then suddenly the circle of thou contracts to just one. And there's actually a quote I have it in one of my slides in my workshops from this interesting book called Baboon Metaphysics, talking about the social origins, really, of our pro-social qualities and also anti-social qualities. There's some line there that says that in between band or group conflicts, the baboon's sense of I expands to include the whole band, or the sense of us, you could say, the thouing of it. But in within band conflicts, the baboon's, and also humans, sense of I contracts to be just this one body. So we can feel that process. So lately I've been really engaging internally and exploring what it's like to thou all others, or thou the other, or to put it a certain way, thou the stranger. And sometimes people we're sleeping with become strangers to us, right? How do we do it? So you see the territory so far? It's really quite powerful, because if you just think about it, you can just look around the room and watch your mind's own process. This is a kind of establishment of a foundation of mindfulness, to establish your own mindfulness, your own sustained awareness in this subtle movement between thouing and itting other people. For example, if we see others and the brain is very efficiently sorting into categories, it's a very efficient way to conserve neural processing resources, and you see someone who is male, female, an authority figure, old, young, attractive to you, unattractive to you, wealthy, driving a large Cadillac aggressively, whatever, a superstar on Fox News, whatever your thing is, and you just watch the process of just not seeing them as a thou. They're just a category. They're a type. They belong to a type, which is a way of itting people. Okay? And it's really easy to just see that. Or what happens when someone disagrees with you, or is mean to you, or sends you one of those flamer customer service letters? All right? What do you do? So I want to talk about what to do about that. And so I want to do a little exploration with you, kind of experientially, then we'll talk about it. Okay? Clear on the territory? It's very provocative, isn't it? Thouing. How do we sustain that thou, etc.? Okay. So the problem often is that on the one hand, we don't generate an empathic, compassionate imagination about who this other being is. And we also tend to not audit, so maybe we have issues around not so readily generating a sense of individualizing or personalizing who they actually are, rather than just relegating them to some category, on the one hand. On the other hand, sometimes it's hard to sustain a sense of them as a thou, because when we do that, we lose a sense of me. In other words, when we connect as a we, it's hard to stay a me. In other words, one of the issues here I've seen many times is that it's hard to sustain a sense that you're a thou, and also you're responsible for your own life. And as they say in gas stations on the signs, your lack of planning does not create a demand upon me, does not become my emergency. Right? So let's do this in two steps. The first step, if you like, pick someone in your life that's difficult for you. It could be someone you're working with, living with, sleeping with, or all three, right? Or it could be someone whose politics you don't like. You can play around with this at lots of different levels, or someone who's really mistreated you. It could be someone you like a lot, but there's still difficulty, okay? So I'll offer three suggestions about that can be factors for expanding the circle of thou to include this difficult person. The first suggestion is to consider and take a moment to consider some of the challenges this difficult person has. Could be their life circumstances, could be their own personality as a kind of challenge to them. or tendencies or the ways they've been socialized. So I'll be quiet for a moment and just kind of see what happens when you consider the challenges this difficult person has. Okay. And then here's a second suggestion, exploration. See if you can get a sense of their suffering. And see if you can find inside yourself some compassion for their suffering. Suffering from subtle discomfort to extreme anguish or pain. It doesn't mean you agree with them or approve of them. But you can have a sense of their suffering and a wish inside you that they not suffer. Perhaps with some warmth for them. See what happens inside you as you find compassion for this difficult person. And then the third suggestion is to bring to mind what it feels like inside you when you're like them, or you're like some aspect of them, or the way they're being right now. Like, for example, in my story, I've definitely been in a situation where I wanted something to happen with some vendor or source or seller or company, service of some kind. And I felt mistreated. I had expected it to be like X, and it turned out to be Y. And I just got, you know, intense about it, and I fired off some irritated email to them or got on the phone or whatever. Okay? See what I mean? That would be like me when I was like them. So in your case, if you can find some aspect of the way they are that's bothersome to you, and then imagine for a moment what it feels like inside you when you're being, in one way or another, like they're being, that's problematic to you. Okay? So see how that is inside. Okay. So, any brief comments so far about how that was or what you saw, what the results of that experiment were for you? Greg.
Well, my go-to guy is Cheney. And I really have a hard time with this. And I can send him Meta and wish him well in jail. But when it comes to something like this, I really struggle to put him in my thou category. I have a pretty big thou category, but he's not in it, and I'd like him to be there. It's like I come up against a wall.
Yeah. Well, thank you for just saying that. I won't try to solve any of this. But thank you for saying it for the moment. Yeah, right. Well, I will say one thing. I find that a very powerful way, for me at least, is to imagine the difficult person as a child. And I just kind of notice that Young adult, nah, jerk. You know, teenager, grade school, oh yeah. Infancy, it's real easy to see, you know, that other person. So you just find where you are. That's a quick thought in passing. Okay, other people? Yeah, right there.
Yeah, when I was first trying to experience compassion for this person, I felt like a tension, a stress. And by just kind of letting go, I was able to let her in and experience that. Just, it was like a physical just relaxation, and it allowed me to experience that empathy and that compassion.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. Maybe one more, two more people? Yeah.
It's a close relative, and I realized that right away I realized that I have this story that I tell about him, and I've stereotyped him, and it's sort of like Democrats or Republicans, you know, how you can stereotype them. And so I realized that, oh, putting myself in his shoes, and then I did go back. Automatically, I went back to when he was younger and some choices that he made that weren't what we planned for him, and then his life went a different direction, and I thought, wow, that must have been really challenging. He was so clever, and he had to derail and go into more like a labor situation rather than a higher education. And so I just, all of a sudden, I felt this compassion. I thought, oh my God, not fair. I can't believe that I could find that.
That's great. Thank you. One thing I think many people notice, I certainly notice it, is that if I'm upset with someone, when I find compassion for them, it helps me. I just notice that I'm less upset.
Yeah.
Okay. Any, maybe one more person. Great.
I found that sometimes I go in and out of it.
Yeah.
My sister is problematic. I'm compassionate and we're nice, and then something happens and we're not, and we go back and forth our whole lives. So
yeah.
That seems to be the reality of that one.
Okay. Did you see anything when you did this little practice here about expanding your sense of being able to thou your sister?
Sure, sure, and I do. I can at times, but yeah. Then some issue will come up, and I forget about that.
Yeah, that's right. It's easy to forget about it. That's why I think, just as a detail, I've started doing this more and more. I'm going to use a word that's really a wrong word, but it's the word in there. I think of it as thou bombs with random strangers. In other words, you just look at somebody driving along the freeway, hunched over that car, you know, and you just go, wow. And you just, the disconnect often between the pace of certain kinds of mental neural processing and other types. Like we see the flow of thought is really quick. You know, we're just seeing people, we're tracking, you know, it's very fast. But the emotional, motivational processes in our brain, the underlying support structures for those, are much more ancient. And I think about how long it takes to look at someone to kind of register them as a being. Rather than that quick thing, oh yeah, person female, person male, blue shirt, whatever. You got to look at them a few seconds for their beingness to kind of land in your heart. Have you ever noticed that? It's really interesting to let things slow down, whether you're driving next to them on the freeway or you just see them in line, you don't know them, or they're maybe a neighbor that you vaguely know. To take it that extra few seconds, and then suddenly you get a feeling. Taking those few extra seconds can make a big difference. So I myself cultivate thou bombs. You know, they don't know I'm thouing them. You know, usually they don't. And yet that's really good practice to do that with people that you don't know. That's kind of easy. The neutral people, sometimes they're called. And you can do that with other people as well. It's quite poignant to think about the ways in which often the people we live with, we start taking them for granted. And what happens when we just stop and look at them for a few extra seconds to register them as a person. And this is someone you've lived with for decades, perhaps. All right? Okay. Now let's go the other way. Because one of the things that happens is, what do you do with people you're trying to thou who are a pain in the neck or something, you know, or they're upset about something and they want you to fix it, or they want more from you than you want to give. That's going to be one of my talks pretty soon, when they want more from you than you want to give. Because I think that's a very interesting moment. And what happens for, I think, a lot of people is because it's hard for them to establish boundaries and to say no, that they do a kind of preemptive strike and restrict the thouing of others. Because that thouing becomes a kind of Trojan horse that opens the gates, lets the other one in, and then ba-boom, there's a fear that they're going to invade and exhaust you and plunder you from the inside out. So finding that way to both thou the other while remaining in the Buddhist term in a state of equanimity, that's a real art, isn't it? So I want to talk a little bit about that side. Right? So you might think here as a little experiment, someone who you are really worried about. Maybe you love them, you like them, you're concerned about them, perhaps a family member, an adult child, a younger child of yours, you know, could be someone that is upset with you and it, you know, feels mistreated by you or hurt by you or, you know, is coming at you in some way, right? Okay. Maybe it's a person who wants to be hired by you, but you're just thinking, no, really, not a good fit, or whatever it might be. So, with regard to that person, let's do a couple different kinds of reflections as an experiment. So first, reflect on the ways that that person has created their own situation. In the ways that they have. Through what they've done or not done. Reflecting on how they are the cause of their own situation, including their own upset. And see what happens inside yourself when you try to see that without anger. Just in a clean way, like from a 10,000 foot view. Okay? And then the last or the second and last little experiment here, a reflection. See if you can imagine in a felt way their sort of disturbance, you know, their fear, their anger, their upset, their complaint, right? There's their neediness, whatever it is. Their accusation, their whole package, whatever that is. See if you can imagine being right alongside, perhaps physically or certainly mentally, right alongside their disturbance without being disturbed yourself. See if you can do that. You're really trying to anchor a sense of peacefulness here, not closing off to the other person. Really seeing them as a being. While at the same time finding an undisturbed place. Okay. You know, like in running river running, which I've only done a couple times on the vagus notion, but there's this like five levels to it. I think of the last one as a class five rapid. Being able to do that is not easy. Okay. How was that exploration for you? Any comments or things that happened for you, please.
I felt sort of selfish and guilty.
Yeah. For both of them or just the last one?
Just this last one.
Yeah.
To see my sister and the anger and the upset and be right there next to her feeling peaceful and open, it was very uncomfortable and awkward and not quite sure possible, you know?
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. And I think that's a very common, reality. Very common, yeah. All right, yeah, please.
I was thinking of children, two children I know.
Yeah.
So I did not see in the first part that it was of their making. That
right.
was very difficult for me to even find that.
Yeah.
And in the second part, I realized that was the only way I could help them.
Was to be peaceful. Or,
yes.
Yeah. And thank you for saying that. She said, you know, there are certain people, let's say children, where you really can't authentically find how they've, in any way, shape, or form, been the cause of their own situation. And I really take that on board. I should have said that at the beginning. I think there are many situations where that's very, very true. And a genuine inquiry into how did you over there cause this, you come up, nope, you didn't. You're utterly innocent. So thank you for bringing that up. Okay. Any other? Yeah, please.
I have to meet with this person tomorrow. And in that last one, I was able to picture where I'd be sitting.
That's good.
Across from this person and within the context and just have this equanimity.
Yeah.
This, I actually felt it inside that I could sit there and allow the chaos of the energy to be all around me and that it would be possible. And I just, now I'm sort of looking forward to it because I want it over with.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, thanks for saying that too. Yeah, definitely. So thinking about, you know, a couple points here on the way to finishing tonight on time in a few minutes, and then I'll need to leave fairly quickly. I'll just say a little bit about my own process. Maybe you can think of it as like steps in the way. So the first thing is something happens, right? And it's natural to be sort of disturbed over here, to be rattled by it. It's unpleasant, or something has happened. We're rattled. And I think the first step is to notice that you're rattled and bring to bear some quality of self-compassion and also some sort of reminder, some wisdom to oneself. Slow it down, cool it, don't be a fool. This is my inner thought stream. You know, just chill, whatever. Okay, or maybe there's just a feeling. I need to pause here for a moment. And then fairly quickly, what helps me at least, I don't know if it would help you, is a quick reminder just about that this person is dealing with difficulties. You know, I've had the experience of, in my teacher now, customer service. People send me this, trust me, flamer, over the top, you gotta be kidding, email, and I muster or manage a civil response that still kind of explains, well, actually, you already did receive that, or you actually this or that, or no, that isn't our policy. Or honestly, if you just scrolled down to the, or read down one more paragraph, it would explain things. But anyway, so I try to keep any kind of snippy, snarky tone out, right, as much as I can, clean, right? But I've repeatedly had the experience where I start out thinking to myself, whoa, what a nut job, or something like that, I admit it, or the equivalent arising, and I kind of get it together, don't be a jerk myself, that's the most important thing, you know, don't be a jerk yourself, life's pretty simple, we kind of operate by that rule, and then I'll get an amazingly gracious, thoughtful, considered email back, where the person says, I am so sorry. This hassle with your website was the fourth crazy thing that happened my day. Or, you know, I've just been dealing with a lot of PTSD re-triggering lately. Or, you know, I've just been grappling. Or I'm just off my meds. Or whatever it is, you know. And you suddenly realize, wow, there's so many more things happening in this person's life, you know. And that's really helpful, too. That helps. And another piece of it is to recognize that we don't have to be demanded upon by them. I think very often we presume there's a demand, or we just buy into their demand, or they think they have the right to demand something. And it really helps to regenerate over here, I don't have to give you what you want from me. And if that's hard to really see or feel, say it a few times in your mind, you know, but in a clean way. Like, actually, I don't have to give you what you want from me. Actually, my attention is my property, not yours. My time is my property, not yours. You know, I don't have to agree with you. I can still respond to your complaint in a way that's honorable within my code unilaterally without buying into or agreeing with your fault finding of me, your over-the-top accusations, whatever, you know. There's a term in psychology, demand characteristics of a situation. Here, if you kind of watch me for a second, here's a really obvious example. So, Tom, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing good, Rick.
All right, great. Sucker. No, so I reached out, shake his hand, that's the demand, right? And we're just automatic like that. And there are a lot of other examples like that where people come at us in a certain way, and it feels like there's a demand. There's kind of a script. And it really helps to slow it down, because if you think of that, there's a place for being efficient and, you know, just social niceties and so forth, but in a lot of ways, it's a loss of equanimity to give in to the demand of the other in a way that's actually not authentic or doesn't feel truly considered or right. That's an interesting violation of equanimity, too. So it really helps to kind of imagine almost a shock absorber, or a word I use, decoupled. In other words, often it happens in life that other people do stuff, you know, and it's like we're connected to them via a steel bar. You know, they go up, we got to go up too. They go down, we got to go down, left, right, north, south, whatever. And if we decouple, you go up or down, and, you know, I'm over here. I'm going to sort through what you're saying. I'm going to manage my reactions initially, and then I'm going to form a considered response, one that to me feels within my code of integrity and, you know, standards of benevolence and kindness and vowing you. I'm going to continue to vow you, right, while I suggest that you withdraw from this program because it doesn't look like a good fit for you. For example, you know, see, I'm going to still vow you, right? And that's a real art, isn't it, to find that way. And what enables us, in a way, to keep vowing people who are difficult for us, right? It's easy to vow people who are all lovey-dovey and nicey-nicey. But to sustain vowing for people that are difficult, it really helps to shore up your sense of equanimity over here, in part because you feel decoupled and you don't presume a demand upon you. And then you can decide what is the wise thing to do. So you might want to explore this for the next 2 weeks and then give me a full report when I'm back. What's it like to do thou bombs? You know, what's it like to watch the itting in the mind? You know? What's it like to ask another person in a way that thous them to stop itting you? That's really interesting, right? I think this is a great exploration, and we'll talk more about it in a couple of weeks. It's okay? Let's take a minute and just sit quietly with the vowing. Oh, sorry, one last thing. I knew I had one more thought. Okay? Who's the ultimate stranger? Ourselves. That's one of the hardest beings in the world to thou, to bring a vowing. Think of vowing as a verb, right? To bring a thouing to ourselves, to treat ourselves as a thou. It shows up in lots of ways. One way it shows up for me is I have a tendency to just drive, 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 to get stuff done, to, you know, et cetera. And often I think deep down inside, this poor little soft animal of the body feels like, to quote a phrase from my dad who grew up on a ranch in North Dakota, the body starts to feel like a horse that's been rid hard and put up wet. You know, where you just kind of flog yourself, do, right? Or you make a mistake, you know, you so harsh, so little thouing, so little of that recognition of your own burdens, the three things I did earlier, your own burdens, you know, a sense of compassion for yourself, and what it's like, really, to feel like yourself. So I suggest you play with that as well. What's it like to thou all beings, include the one who looks back at you from the mirror. So let's sit with this for a minute. Thanks for your attention and presence.
Thank you, Rick.
Thou on.